When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Hartman here with you. You're listening to Reception, Perception, the show. All right, beautiful show laid out in front of us here today, Matt. I want to start with this absolutely insano story in KC regarding Rasheed Rice. Now, he had cleanup surgery, so he had surgery on his knee, and then he violated his probation, so now he's going to jail for, 30 days? I think he's going to jail for 30 days. He's going to have to do rehab in jail. Matt, I don't think... We've been covering the NFL for a long time, friend.
Mm-hmm.
We have been covering the NFL for a long time. I don't recall ever seeing a story like this where a guy is rehabbing in jail, bro? Like, what is happening with Rasheed Rice?
Oh, my God, man. Yeah, Adam Schefter wrote up a post about this, and I'm just going to read you a little excerpt that saw my buddy Mike Golic Jr. shared this, so I, of course, retweeted it because it is one of the most insane paragraphs you're ever going to read about a player. Now, Rice is in a Dallas County jail, and he will be unable to get the type of medical attention and rehab that could have expedited his return from his recent knee surgery. Rice still is expected to be ready for training camp later this summer, but he also is facing the uncertainty of having to recover while in jail. Facing the uncertainty of having to recover while in jail is one of the more insane statements I've ever read. Speaking of insane,
yeah,
I think my main takeaway from reading this, beyond just, again, how wild this, obviously, just Rasheed Rice just not a good decision maker. Let's just put it that way. That's how we're going to go ahead and put it. That's my first reaction. My second reaction is, again, speaking of the word insane, I think it was categorically insane that this team just ran back this wide receiver room once again. And that is beyond – that is – even beyond the fact that Rice is a guy that you cannot count on. I mean, and this just is another proof of that. Like, there's no way you'd get right now, if I was in charge of the Kansas City Chiefs, I'd already be in the back of my mind. Well, there's no way we're giving this guy a second contract. You know, I wouldn't have done it before this news. And I'm not doing it now, you know, not to mention the fact that even while he was very productive last year, the offense wasn't good. Like, the offense had real problems. And a big part of the problem is, even though he is a really, really good zone beater, as we know in, via his reception perception charting, he's not a good man coverage beater. He's a guy that needs role catering, and you don't have any of the other guys to do the stuff that you need to do, like beat man coverage on the outside. I mean, I like Cyrus Allen, right? They're fifth round draft pick, and he actually is a really good man coverage beater, but he's a fifth round draft pick. I have no idea if he's going to make any impact on this team. But that was the only addition that they made, really. They brought back Tyquan Thornton, Xavier Worthy, who I think, to be fair to Worthy, I'm really curious to chart him out for the year two drop, which I'm in the middle of right now, working on those year three drop. I'm sorry. Chart his second season, because I do think you could make an argument, and I'm sure the Chiefs are making this argument. Well, he was never really healthy last year because he got his shoulder blasted running the mesh concept in week one when he ran into Travis Kelce, who's like 100 pounds heavier than him. Which I think is...
Yeah, but that's his teammate, though. I mean, like, again, if you're expecting Xavier Worthy to stay healthy when he can't stay healthy against his own teammate, we got problems.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
I'm with you. I'm just saying that, like, he's probably a better player than what he was last year. Like, I think... And I'm lower on Worthy than consensus, probably, but still, I think to be just... In the act of fairness here, I think we could say he probably wasn't able to be the best version of himself, whatever that best version is, which I still think, even if that's the case, you still need another body in the room. You bring back Tyquan Thornton. You know, Jalen Royals is a guy they took in the fourth round last year, who's basically like Rasheed Rice insurance, in my opinion. That's
I like him. He's a good player.
I guess. I mean, he probably needs to play in the exact role that they've got Rashee Rice playing in, you know, when he's healthy and not in jail. So we'll see about that. But still. So, yeah, just to me, it was like insane that they didn't bring in more people. Like more of a different body type. Why didn't they use draft picks? I know.
Like, what is going on? I mean, I get that it wasn't like the strongest wide receiver class, Matt, but this is crazy. This is insane. Like, this depth chart at wide receiver is absolutely insane. This is what is boggling my mind, Matt, is that they are building this team as if it's like some like 1980s defensive minded head coach. You know, they're like, ah, cool, man. Kenneth Walker had a great postseason run. We're going to bring him in. We're going to draft a guy who's great in man gap. We're going to bring in Emmett Johnson. Yeah, here we go. All right. We got to reestablish this run game, man. We got to bring back Eric Bieniemy. Mm-hmm. All right. Great. We're in, baby. We're in. We're going to address the O-line and defensive line. Man, we're going to win in the trenches. Okay. Guys, like, what is going on? You're building this team like, I don't know, like some kind of defensive-minded coach from the 80s, 90s. Like, this is crazy to me. You have Patrick freaking Mahomes. Like, what? Air this bad boy out. Like, what are we doing? This is crazy.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, obviously Mahomes, I bet he plays week one, but how healthy is he going to be? You know, all of that is a big question too. You know, I think they diagnosed some of their problems correctly, which is that they did need a real running game. And I think that that will be their big answer to all of these questions, but I don't think they diagnosed their passing game problems correctly. Both from a scheme perspective, unless Eric Bieniemy is bringing some stuff from Chicago that he picked up with his 1 year there and bringing that into his offense. Maybe. We don't know, obviously, but
I don't think so.
I'm skeptical of that. And it's still going to be Andy Reid's offense, obviously. And then from a personnel standpoint, yeah, I just think it's insane to run this group back. And unless Cyrus Allen is just like the man, I don't think they have any answers.
My question to you, Matt, is why of all the teams that are apparently in the AJ Brown sweepstakes, like why are the Kansas City Chiefs not in this conversation, man? Like, I mean, I don't want to hear about salary cap. I mean, look at the Rams. The Rams are apparently in the market for AJ Brown. Like, what? You've got Puka, Devontae, but they're still in the market for AJ Brown, right? Like, okay, Kansas City, you need an established outside X receiver. AJ Brown is on the market somehow, some way, despite Mike Evans signing what I would consider to be a below market deal to go to San Francisco. He couldn't get Mike Evans. Okay. AJ Brown is out on the table. Why is KC not in this market for AJ Brown?
I mean, I do think it's a fair question, right? And it leads me to leads me actually into several directions, but one, yeah, I agree. Like, I would be at least trying to figure out if we can get AJ Brown on this team. And it does lead
send
me to think
first.
It does
send a freaking first.
Oh God, I don't know. Sending a first round draft.
It's an overpay.
Yeah,
it's absolutely an overpay. But send a first, man. Go get AJ Brown. Go try to go win this championship. Like, what are we doing out here? This is so crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I do think roster is not that good in Kansas City. You know, you have Mahomes like not 100% healthy. I think that could have been part of the calculus of like why they don't go get a wide receiver this year is because like there were just a lot of other problems on the roster that they obviously had to address. You know, when it comes to along their defense, especially in the secondary after trading Trent McDuffie. So like I do kind of get that part of it, but you know, never. Yeah. And along the defensive line, obviously, which is their other first round pick was along the defensive line there in Woods. So, like, I do think we should acknowledge that. And I'm not sure that they're in the position to just like make a championship push. But you do have Mahomes. You do have Andy Reid. Like, you are always going to be in the mix for a championship when you have these two guys. So there's that part of it. I still think a first round pick for AJ Brown makes me nervous. It does continue to kind of just ring around in my head. And I know I've said this on the show before, but like, are we sure? Like, just AJ Brown, Patriots, that's a done deal. Like, no other team's going to get in the mix here. Like, I don't
guess not.
I mean, it's it it seems everybody seems to think it is a done deal. Even people who are very plugged in think like, yeah, this will just happen on June 1st. But, you know, even like I wouldn't do this if I was Jacksonville. But there's been rumors about like, could the Jags get involved with, you know, sending like Brian Thomas Jr. in a second for A.J. Brown? I don't really see the point in that at all if I'm Jacksonville, even though Brian Thomas Jr. had a bad season last year. I just feel like there's. I just don't know if it's – it probably ends up happening, A.J. Brown, Patriots, but I at least think like team – this discussion should kind of reveal that there are other teams in the mix. But let me answer your question with a question here.
Oh, yeah.
And I alluded to this, I think, in passing earlier this week. I have no idea what time is. Earlier this week on our show or maybe last week.
Okay. All right.
But now that, you know, Stephon Diggs was not found guilty or found not guilty in his trial – why are they not? They should sign Diggs yesterday. Like that's totally. That should 100% happen. And like, even if, and, you know, again, Diggs, you can get for free, not free, but he's going to cost you money, but he's a free agent. You don't have to trade draft pick for him. He's obviously older than AJ Brown. So there is that. And, you know, he wouldn't necessarily solve your problems at X, but production wise, 85 catches, 1,013 yards, and 4 touchdowns for Stephon Diggs last year. 78 catches, 1,003 yards, 7 touchdowns for A.J. Brown last year. You also, just even if you're looking from an efficiency standpoint, 2.42 yards per route for Steph Diggs, 5th most in the NFL. A.J. Brown, 15th most, so 2.09, obviously still very good. No one's saying... I mean, I do think from a role catering perspective, I don't even know if A.J. Brown necessarily should be like a vertical X receiver at this standpoint. And obviously that's not what Diggs was. Diggs was 52.3% snaps in the slot, but he was still really good. And I would say even probably, I haven't charted out both these guys' full seasons yet, but there were parts of Diggs' game that I was like, yeah, he's still pretty damn good. A.J. Brown, 7th in the NFL in yards per route run against man coverage. Stephon Diggs, 10th. Like, I mean, he will give you he is an answer against man coverage is Diggs. If we're saying this is a team that can't beat man coverage, I don't know.
Let me expand your mind, and I want to expand the mind of the listeners. You talked about Ben Johnson biblical greed. Why not go get A.J. Brown and sign Stephon Diggs?
That is biblical greed. Can the Chiefs afford that?
You want to talk about biblical? Just go get it. Okay. When Rashee Rice comes back, now all of a sudden you've got a real strength on your team offensively, a real deal strength. You've got A.J. Brown manning the X. You got Stephon Diggs playing flanker. Now you've got Rashee Rice out of the slot. Baby, we are cooking. Like, if I am KC, this is what I'm doing. Like, what are we talking about here? You do that. You send that first to Philly. Okay, great. So you've sent them a bottom 10 pick in the first round. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Like, without those guys, KC's winning 9-10 games. With those guys, they're now winning 12-13 games, right? Like, what? This is a no-brainer. Go get A.J. Brown. Send a first. Apparently, that's what Philly wants. Like, go send them a first. Okay. Then you go sign Stephon Diggs. You've got a great trio of wide receivers now. It also, the run game additions also allow you to bring Patrick Mahomes along slowly in regards to health as he starts to gel with these new receivers because it's so late in the game. What am I missing here? Am I just stupid? Like, I don't get this. Like, and they're talking about like, okay, we're going to bring in Tyreek Hill. Like, guys, like Tyreek Hill has like nerve damage in his foot. Like, what?
Please.
This is, no, absolutely not. What? Oh my gosh. Anyways,
You're missing about $5 million. That's what you're missing. Because apparently, I just looked it up on overthecap.com. The Chiefs are -$5 million in effective cap space, which is the cap space that you'll have after you sign your projected draft picks. So easiest
thing in the world. You know what they'll do? They'll borrow from the bank of Mahomes. That's all they have to do.
Yeah.
Easy.
Have they already done that? They already done that this offseason? I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know the answer to that question. But I think you could probably get one of these. That's why, like, I mean, Diggs is probably not going to cost you very much at all.
No.
That's why I think it makes so much sense. So
not at all.
Yeah. And by the way, you mentioned the Rams too. They're another team that I think would make sense for Diggs because they're looking for like a third pass catcher. So I'm very
sure.
And I know that like the instant thing is, well, he should go to the Raiders or the Commanders because they have weaker receiver rooms. I mean, I'm thinking like he should just end up with one of these like real mercenary Super Bowl teams. Totally. Is it with Kansas City, LA, that would make the most sense for Diggs. But yeah, Chiefs receiver room. This is where we're having fantasy. We're having fantasy land conversations because they've landed themselves in a bizarro spot with a bizarro receiver room.
The AFC is wide open, y'all. Okay, Denver, Bo Nix, where's he at? I don't know. Patriots, a lot of turmoil. Dude, the AFC is wide open. Casey needs to open that door and just go and get it, man. Anyways, okay. We continue on. Okay, this is a wide receiver show, but of course we have quarterback and tight end and, of course, running back profiles on the site receptionperception.com. Today, I want to talk about some of these guys that I profiled here. Adam Randall, Emmett Johnson, and Katron Allen. I feel like this is the unofficial Kansas City show because we're going to talk about Emmett Johnson, who I really, really like here as well, Matt. But, man, can I start with the spiciest one here?
Yeah,
if anyone read the profile, the first line out the gates for my Adam Randall write-up was, the more I watch Adam Randall, the more I see Le'Veon Bell. And I know that's just so, and like, I'm not the, if you read all of my other profiles, like there's no comps like this, like not even remotely close where I'm like, oh, this guy's the next ... I'll say, hey, he reminds me of this guy in this way or this guy in this way. But Adam Randall, the more I watch this guy, he's got that patience. He's got that instinct. He's a converted wide receiver. He's got the hands, the route running. Adam Randall is such a versatile running back that Baltimore got in the fifth round. And yeah, I do see Lev Bell upside. I'm not going to say he's going to absolutely get there, but for me, Matt, the more I watch him play, that upside of Le'Veon Bell, I think exists for Adam Randall.
This is such an interesting one, obviously, from, you know, just a lot of the, not just some of your charting data and of course the comp, but yeah, Adam Randall's a really fascinating player because he's a converted wide receiver, as you mentioned. He's huge, 6'3", 232 pounds. Like, he is a big, big man. And he was a flag plant pick by ownership for the Baltimore Ravens. If people haven't followed this story, Eric DaCosta, the general manager, said, yeah, we gave Steve Bisciotti the owner. He wanted a draft pick. He wanted a one guy to like take as his own. And of course, like, it's a running back, right? It would have been very funny if it was like, you know, some linebacker or safety, something like that. Of course, it's like it's a highlight position. With the running back spot, I would have thought it was funny if he landed on like a corner, you know, some nickelback or something.
Amazing.
But anyways, yeah, he lands on Adam Randall, the running back. Steve Bisciotti decides like, yeah, this is his guy. So I don't know if that it means anything or whatever, but it certainly means that Steve Bisciotti's rooting for this guy. But yeah, I mean, I'm really fascinated to hear more about why you think the Lev Bell comparison is there. But it did stand out to me reading your profile that he has this high success rate on zone concepts, specifically outside zone. And I'm really kind of keen on watching the Ravens this year and what type of offense they are, because Declan Doyle, who is 29 years old, the same age as the starting quarterback, very fascinating background. Yeah. He comes from Sean Payton. Obviously, he spent last year with Ben Johnson in Chicago. And I've been watching so much Bears lately because I charted Luther Burden. I just finished charting Roma Dunze for the year three drop. And dude, that offense it's awesome. It's so good. And the design of their run game specifically is like immaculate. I don't know. It's a really well-designed offense in the pass game and the run game. So really fascinating to see Doyle, who by all accounts is basically just going to try to not reinvent the wheel. He's going to bring a lot of that stuff that they were doing in Chicago last year. He's going to bring it here to Baltimore, which I think is fascinating. I think Adam Randall on some of the zone concept that they ran out last year would theoretically fit very well after reading your profile.
To highlight what we're talking about here, if Doyle does bring some of that Chicago style offense to Baltimore, understand that there was a heavy dosage of outside runs and a really heavy dosage of zone runs. Also, let me table set here for just a second here. In the collegiate game, man gap runs are much more prevalent. I'm talking like it's flipped on its head, like maybe 70, I would say on average, maybe 65 to 70% of all runs are man gap. Easier to coach, easier to, you know, install. You just, hey, guard, you run over here, you blast this guy running back, just go over here into this hole, run into that gap. Okay. Like it's just easier to coach. Mm-hmm. I think it's just easier to set up, easier to install. Okay. At the pro level, it's the exact opposite. We're talking on average, maybe 60 to 65% of all run plays are zone plays, right? Like even the heaviest of heavy man gap teams are going to be 50-50, right? So there's just so much more zone concepts at the NFL level than there are at the collegiate level. So zone running is incredibly important for a running back. That being said, I'm not trying to say like if you have a low zone score in college, you just can't be that guy at the pros. We know that the offensive line, Matt, at the pros is so much better coached, yeah, and they just have a lot more talent there, those kind of things. Okay, now that being said, like I said, Chicago last year was top 10 in zone rush rate. They were top 5 in outside rush rate in 2025. So if we think what we think here, and Doyle is going to bring some of that to Baltimore, you better be good in zone and you better be good running to the outside. And man, boxes checked big time for a player in Adam Randall, who was, in my opinion, the best zone runner in this class, and really showed a real strength running to the outside.
Yeah, no, I am really, really excited to see that, because, you know, Derrick Henry, look, is the man, a great outside zone runner, great zone concept runner in his own right, obviously. Totally. You know, Baltimore last year was third, according to Fantasy Points data, in yards per carry on zone runs. So pass game design stuff, some of the route concepts will be different, but honestly, from a run game standpoint, I think there's a lot of the Bears did so much like fun kind of eye candy from a, you know, run game standpoint. So there will be some kind of change over here. But just on like brass tack stuff, there's a lot of shared, I don't know if you would call it DNA, but like shared little tweaks, shared little wrinkles, just from like a top-down standpoint with what the Ravens are doing offensively with what the Bears are doing. And I actually do think that applies in the pass game too, with how much like sometimes you see these teams go from just like, oh, we're very spread heavy and like we don't have a lot of motion, and now we're going to try to do this like Ben Johnson. It's that there was a lot of like more condensed formations and like very a lot of motion and stuff like that with the Ravens offense last year. But there will be some changes in the pass game. So, but the run game, I do think there's some pretty, like the offensive linemen, they obviously draft Vega Ione in the first round. That's going to be a pretty fun fit, but some of the guys that are there already, no idea who the center is at this point after they lost Tyler Linderbaum in free agency. That's obviously a big deal, but still, I think there's some schematic change over there. The offensive lineman won't have to do like a full overhaul of some of the concepts and some of the communication and stuff like that. So there's definitely a good run game kind of ecosystem here. Derrick Henry is great, but you know, Derrick Henry is an older player. I know it seems like impossible that he would ever fall off, but you know, Father Time does win eventually. I won't be the one to predict it. I won't be like, this is the year it happens, but it is at least worth knowing who the Ravens backup running back is, just in case that does happen.
And I know people are probably thinking like, okay, well, you know, they've got a couple of backup running backs, Justice Hill, Rasheen Ali.
Yeah, but like,
I mean, this is a new coaching staff. They have zero loyalty to Hill, who, by the way, I like Justice Hill. I think he's been a really effective and good player. But it really seemed like Harbaugh loved Justice Hill. Like he's always gassing up Justice Hill.
And Todd Monken especially seemed like he loved Justice Hill. He was always talking. And Justice Hill, though, even still, like in a hypothetical world where Derrick Henry was to get hurt, like, and he missed a month of the season or something, like Justice Hill's role would still be as a third down, you know, receiving pass protection back. Whereas like, he's not going to inherit that early down banger role.
Well, I mean, here's the thing with Randall though. Like he was one of the better pass blocking backs that I saw over the past two seasons, honestly, an 88.9% pass block success rate, a really, really strong number. And you know what, man, Justice Hill, by the way, Justice Hill's getting a little up there too, man. Like he's entering his age 29 season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's
a lot of 29 year olds.
I think it's just a lot of 29 year olds, man. Derrick Henry is 32 years old, coming off of four consecutive 300 plus touch seasons. So I mean, there's just a lot of wear and tear, man. I do think that Adam Randall is going to get a really good opportunity here to display his wares. So, yeah, for me, I'm very, very interested. And it's funny, too, man. Like, anytime you talk about legendary players, yeah, you know, people are going to get all up in it, you know. And as somebody had said, like, this is such a bad comp because Le'Veon Bell had elite top of the league lateral movement. And I just think people are misremembering Le'Veon Bell. Like, I love Le'Veon Bell. He was one of my favorite players of all time. I love Le'Veon Bell. so for me to make this comparison is no short thing, but I think people misremember. Like, he was crazy patient, but it's not like he had like this like insane LeSean McCoy, Barry Sanders lateral move. That's not how we went to go play. Like, go turn on any like highlight film of Le'Veon Bell. That's not what you're going to see. What you're going to see is power, strength, and shifty, slippery side-to-side movement, not like this like super explosive side-to-side movement. And that's the reason why I look at Adam Randall and say, yeah, this is very similar. First of all, Le'Veon Bell was 230 pounds. Adam Randall's 232.
Yeah, I think that's what people forget about Le'Veon Bell. I know it. Different times in his career, like he lost weight or whatever, but you know, he was a big back. Like, he was a pretty sizable dude, over 6'1", and that 230 pounds coming into the NFL. Yeah, so maybe he played like 225 or something at different points.
Still big guy.
Yeah, still definitely a big back.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what, and so like, yeah, when you look at the body types too, it's like, no, actually they're really similar coming in. Le'Veon Bell is 6'2", Randall 6'3", right? Like, so I just think they have a very similar play style that that I think could materialize in the NFL. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's going to be really interesting.
I like it.
One of my favorite players, Matt, came out of Nebraska, and Emmett Johnson. I think Kansas City fans will really like to hear this. He's 5'10", 202 pounds. He ran a 4.56 40. He had a 35.5-inch vertical. I think the 40 and the vertical are kind of sort of, I described it as like plain Jane metrics. Like, it's fine. It's good. It's not great. And I think that sort of showed itself on tape too in regards to Emmett Johnson, Matt. But, man, this guy plays so hard. And if you think about, like, you know, Eric Bieniemy coming back into Kansas City, I just feel like Emmett Johnson is going to be that player that EB's really going to like. Mm. And remember, EB too is a big time like running back developer.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised to see Emmett Johnson get a little bit of burn here. Obviously they spent, you know, big money to bring in Kenneth Walker, but shoot, man, like, Emmett Johnson, I think, will have an opportunity to make some plays here for Kansas City.
Right. And I mean, Kenneth Walker's never been a guy that has been trusted to be a full feature back. Obviously, you'd think the Chiefs are going to give him every opportunity to be that guy because they paid him a pretty good chunk of change. But, you know, still, like, I think Kenneth Walker, I would argue, I know like a lot of fantasy bros hate this, but I would argue that the reason he was at his best in the NFL postseason is because he was fresh, because he wasn't worn down from a bunch of carries. So. Or like, I hate to say it, but that is my theory. Obviously you can't prove it, but that is my theory of why he was so good and still so explosive and looked like, oh man, yeah, this guy looks more explosive than everybody else in the field. Yeah, he's not as tired as everybody else on the football field. So I do think you could argue that that Kansas City would do well to have some kind of change of pace. And you mentioned Eric Bieniemy as a running back developer. I mean, shoot, we were just talking about that Chicago run game. You don't think the running back coach had a little bit of something to do with that, right? And I mean, DeAndre Swift probably had, would you say, the best year of his career last year? I would say from a rushing perspective, yeah, I would say probably the best season of his career from a decisiveness perspective. Kyle Manungai, a freaking seventh round pick who, you remember the clips from, I think it might have been minicamp or training camp or something like that, but EB just dogging on him about like, you're running this like an old man, you know, like, I mean, yelling at him. And Eric Bieniemy is supposed to be a guy who coaches these guys really, really hard. Remember that kind of like didn't go over well when he was the OC in Washington, right? So stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, he got the most out of a seventh round rookie last year. It's certainly possible that Emmett Johnson comes in here and gets pushed, but like, what do you think? Like, cause I watched Emmett Johnson for another show I did pre-draft, and I mean, he's an interesting guy to me. I thought he just like when he's at the second level, I really like the way he makes people miss and the way he operates at the second level. I just think getting to the second level can be a challenge sometimes for him.
He's a much better runner in man gap than zone. And I just laid out all those. So you got to be good in zone, all that kind of stuff. Okay. So that being said, I liked his plant foot, right? Like this guy can get out to the outside. He can threaten and then he can plant and go back inside. Mm-hmm. So I like that. He had a 78.1% success rate on outside man gap run concepts. So I'm really slicing this down. Man gap plays that ended up going to the outside. And I just want to be very clear about the charting. Like, I'm not diagnosing where the play should go. That's not what I want to do. It just is. It's too complicated. But when you see a man gap concept, you know it, right? Like you see pulling guards, you see duo, those kind of things, right? Okay. But sometimes it might be designed to go into the A or B gap, and that thing closes down. So what opens up? It's like a C gap, or maybe to the outside, like you're going off tackle, or maybe you're going way out there, you know. So on man gap concepts that ended up going outside, he had a 78.1% success rate. That was just below Jadarian Price, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Jadarian Price with 78.3% on these man gap outside runs. And as we know, Jadarian Price is awesome. Maybe one of the best guys running to the outside. And he's a first round talent, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, Emma Johnson is in that group. I think he does a really good job breaking it to the outside. And to me, I think his overall success rate on man gap, 61.1, that was, again, within shouting distance of Cam Scadabaugh at 61.5. So these are two guys that can operate a little bit in a phone booth. And I agree with you. Getting him into space will be difficult because he's, again, just kind of sort of a vanilla athlete. But if you're just looking for a guy to give you 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 yard runs, I think Emma Johnson fits that profile pretty well. And I don't know, man, in the NFL, like that is a long career.
Yeah.
That's a long career. And I am curious to see how much run Emma Johnson's going to get there in KC.
Yeah. I mean, if you just think of, he's a guy that the way you're describing it, like, a little bit of a grinder, you know, I mean, that's kind of what they need alongside Kenneth Walker. So it makes sense why they looked at him in that way. Yeah, a little bit of a vanilla athlete for sure. I don't think he's going to make a lot of explosive plays, but that's what Kenneth Walker, right. Kenneth Walker is an explosive playmaker. So he can give you that. Whereas Emmett Johnson could just kind of give you some of those, like, let's get on base. And if we're talking about the Chiefs, back to our conversation at the beginning of the show, that's sort of what they need, right? Like if their offense is going to be better this year, it's not, and they're not going to make any of these, you know, fantasy land veteran receiver additions that we talked about. It will have to be like they're just in more positive down and distance situations. Like their run game is really good on first down to keep the success rate kind of up and going, which, by the way, has at times been that even with a guy like Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt, like their explosive play rate was really low, but their success rate was high. So I think they just want a mix of, all right, we are going to get some get on base runs, but we're also going to get big plays too, because I think the passing game will just be what it will be. But if they have a more competent run game, maybe their pass game can sort of feed off that. I don't know. I'm not going to get excited about the pass game under any circumstances. So at this point, like it comes down to the run game. So if Emmett Johnson could be a part of that, that would be a big win.
Catron Allen out of Penn State is a super interesting profile too, Matt, because I think he is a good athlete. I don't know how good of an athlete because he did not participate in any on-field testing at either the combine or his Penn State pro day. Hmm. I think that's an interesting choice. He's 5'11", 216 pounds, and yeah, he seems fast, but he must not have been very confident in regards to those speed numbers because why? I mean, especially your pro day, like if you didn't want to do it at the combine, that's cool, but you got all this extra time at your pro day and you know it's going to be just geared to make you look really good, right? So like for him to not run at the pro day either, I thought that was a pretty curious decision. And dude, this guy was a very productive back at Penn State, nearly 1,400 scrimmage yards. He had 15 total touchdowns. Dude, he ran 6.2 yards per carry. This was really, really good. Now, drafted in the sixth round by Washington, Man, I'm curious to see what Catron Allen brings to that Washington backfield.
Right, because I think they need something, you know?
Yep.
There's definitely a chance it could be just kind of a murky three-way committee where you tell me if you disagree. I kind of, my initial thought was like, and it's funny because Catron Allen, right, he calls himself Fat Man.
Yeah, he does.
You think about
what a nickname.
What a nickname. You think, and he loves it too. Like, he's all in on the nickname. Yeah. So, you know, he almost kind of then like almost starts to typecast him as like a, you know, more of the grinder back. It doesn't sound like from reading your charting profile, you really think of him as that guy. But mentally, that was what I thought of him as, especially because they did just like kind of push Nick Singleton to the side and give Catron Allen more run because I think he was just more reliable. Yeah. Just totally, you know, just better, even though Singleton was the better athlete allegedly and bigger recruit, all that type of stuff. So that's kind of like mentally how you bucket Catron Allen. And then Corey Krosky Merritt is more of the you know, kind of explosive play, change of pace guy, and then Rashad White is a third down, like pass catcher, whatever. That does sound like it could be like a murky three-way committee, right? Which could end up still being an effective run game if they could complement each other. But like, where do you think Catron Allen sort of fits into that? Like, is that stereotyping that I'm doing of him as the fat man kind of inaccurate?
Well, let me say this. Catron did such a good job getting to the outside, right? Like 74% success rate, outside success rate was one of the best marks in 2025. He just is able to get there. And the way that he runs too, man, he is obsessed with trying to bounce it to the outside. You know, I just said like, hey, yeah, man gap plays, like they could be designed into the B gap and like, you know, the running back could see that gap close and just try to bounce it. Even if the B gap was open, like Catron's trying to bounce it to the outside. That it's not his best trait, you know, like you want to see a guy, if there are yards available, you know, between the tackles, just go get that, especially if the play design is going that way. But man, he really likes getting to the outside. And honestly, this is what I wrote in my profile too. I think he's better in chaos than he is under design.
Hmm.
Right? So like when the play breaks down and he's able to kind of sort of freestyle and get to the outside, I thought that's when he looked at his best. Right? So in regards to him being a grinder, yeah, I just don't see him as a grinder. Like, if anything, like, I want more of that tendency actually built in into his game where he can actually be like, all right, man, I'm not going to be able to get to the outside here, man. Let me just go pick up 3 yards. I don't think we saw enough of that in his Penn State profile. I think he's just an interesting player in this mix because we got Bill Krosky Merritt, as you mentioned. Rashad White feels like the passing guy. But they also brought in Jerome Ford. So it's a really crowded room. And it's interesting to me too, Matt, because you know what? Before the draft actually happened, you know, two guys at ESPN had him in their top five in regards to position, right? Like they had him as a top five running back. We're talking about Matt Miller. We're talking about Mel Kiper. So Mel Kiper and Matt Miller both had Catron Allen as a top five running back prospect. And dude, he goes so late. So it feels like Washington got a really good value out of this pick, but they also spent money to go bring in Rashad White and Jerome Ford.
Not much money though. That's the thing.
No, yeah, they're skinny deals. They're very skinny deals.
Yeah. No, not much money. One of my, my childhood best friend, best man at the wedding, Andrew, we live together in Northern Virginia. He sent me a tweet that, and this is going to make only sense to like five people listening to this. Okay. He's like, he sent me a tweet. He's like, Rashad White's going to have to live in Dale City and commute up to Ashburn to with that contract. So again, that's going to make like sense to know people. But anyways, point being, they didn't give Rashad White a lot of money. All right. Point being here, they didn't give him a lot of money. They did not spend a lot of resources on any of these running backs, honestly. So they're almost kind of trying to like moneyball the position, right? Or essentially just, hey, we're going to get into camp and see what happens here. Like we're going to see if any of these guys can really emerge as the dude, or if it is just kind of this murky committee. Which is so interesting because this is another team that I'm really fascinated with, like what the structure of their offense looks like, because I do think David Blau is going to bring a lot of like Ben Johnson type principles here to this team. after being with Ben Johnson, kind of as Johnson was coming up the coaching ranks and David Blau was a backup quarterback. He's talked about this team being more under center and more traditional, I think, than Cliff Kingsbury, who obviously he did coach and play under as well. So I think it might be a blending of worlds here. So I really am fascinated to see what this Washington offense looks like. I should also just acknowledge, too, that it could just look bad, right? Like Blau's getting a huge promotion here, up like jumping multiple levels from assistant quarterback coach to offensive coordinator. He was in the league not that long ago. We don't have proof of concept there. Sometimes when you're trying to blend worlds, you're just doing two things not that well. So it is interesting to watch in that regard. And for a guy like Catron Allen, man, it's just, can he emerge as kind of like a steal at this position? That would be huge for this team because, you know, personnel wise at receiver, if Antonio Williams, who I really like, if he's not ready to rock as a rookie, well, that receiving room looks pretty bad too. So it's just very, Washington's offense is, I'm interested in it as an idea, but you know, unless a guy like Catron Allen can really step up and a guy like Antonio Williams can really step up, they are missing kind of elements at both positions.
It's going to be really important for David Blau if they run a lot of more of these, you know, Chicago style Ben Johnson type of, we just talked about it, like they got to get to the outside, they got to run zone. Well, if that's the case, then I think this draft pick makes a lot more sense, right? Like, because this is a player that was good in zone, 60.4% success rate in zone, which is a really good number. We talked about the outside scores, but it's because too, he just is not good, Matt, straight up not good running to the inside. When you lump all of the inside runs together, he posted the lowest success rate of all the running backs I've ever charted. 33.96% success rate is so bad. I thought Woody Marks was bad in this area. He reminds me a lot, Catron does, of Woody Marks, where he's much better bouncing it to the outside than trying to run in between the tackles. He just doesn't look confident or decisive running to the middle. And it's because of what I said. Like, he's always looking to bounce to the outside. So he just doesn't hit that gap nearly as hard as he needs to. But let me say this. If that's the role they ask him to play, where he's bouncing it to the outside a lot, okay, then I love this draft pick. But if they're going to try to be more of a power run game, okay, then this pick really doesn't make a lot more sense. That being said, Bill Kroski-Barrett also really good running to the outside. So I think this room is built to run to the outside. Ben Johnson, you know, we got some of those, like, you know, running back tendencies coming into Washington now too. So yeah, it's an interesting pick. And I'll say this too, Matt, if he's a better athlete than what we think he is, and remember, he didn't test at all. If he's a better athlete than we think he is, he has an opportunity to be a legitimate starting running back for Washington, because it's, as you mentioned, it's not as if Rashad White got money. It's not as if Bill Kroski-Merritt is this like high draft pick. No. You know what I'm saying? Like, the room is wide open. If Catron Allen is a better athlete than we think and is making these splash chunk plays on the outside, yeah, he could be the starting running back for Washington.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
Absolutely wide open. Just a couple numbers on Washington's run game last year. They were 29th in terms of percentage of runs that were zone concepts. They had the third best success rate and the seventh best yards per carry. So really interesting when it comes to that regard, that they were very efficient. They just didn't do it often. So obviously maybe if they, and there's a lot of the linemen that are coming back this year as well. Although Tyler Biadasz, their center, has moved on. They released him. So there is that. But like Josh Connerly's coming back. Laramie Tunsil's coming back. Some of the interior guys coming back here as well. So really that will be fascinating to kind of track that part of it. But yeah, man, I think that there's just tons of opportunity in this room. I think this offense is fascinating. I don't know how good it's going to be, but I'm fascinated by here's the bottom line. If Jaden Daniels is healthy and Terry McLaurin is healthy, I think this will be a good offense. How good it is going to be is going to be, can one of these running backs emerge? Can it be Catron Allen? And obviously Antonio Williams in the passing game is a big deal too. So I love him. Yeah, me too. I love Antonio Williams. I'm really excited about him. And obviously, they might add Brandon Ayuk at some point before week one, whenever the Niners decide to let him go. Who knows if he ever plays football again. Obviously, that's a big wild card there too. So, and even the Chigakonko addition, I think, is fascinating in this type of offense as well. Totally. So, yeah, like there's definitely some things that have to break right for Washington, including one of these young running backs emerging. So Catron Allen, definitely an imperfect player, but has a lot of opportunity in front of him.
Yeah, I think it's more like, again, I'm doing the whole running back thing, but man, it's got to be more important for Washington to get their passing game fixed up, right? Like, that's why they moved on, right, from their coordinator last year, yeah. Cliff Kingsbury, moving into a new direction. I think they just want to modernize the offense. It's just so much. It's crazy to me that we are just, what, two seasons away now, two seasons removed from Washington playing in the conference championship, right? So, like, that's... Wow, just incredible stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe this is the same team.
In 24, they were obviously so ahead of schedule. And then last year was almost like, it wasn't a regression to the mean. It was a regression past the mean, right? So, like, there's some middle ground there for them. You know, but it's a tough division. Philly's still Philly. Dallas, I think, is going to be good this year. And then obviously New York, we'll see. Well, New York is the total wild card. Like, the Giants could be. There's a lot to kind of break down and consider there.
I think they'll be better than last year, but still average.
Yeah. Yeah. I think average would be a big win, like, based on just kind of how far in the dumps they've been of late. So, yeah. But at the same time, like, Washington obviously was not a good team last year either. They were not picking far. They were picking seventh in the draft. New York was picking fifth. So, again, Jaden Daniels' health and, like, taking the next step in his development is the biggest variable here. So, I agree with you. The passing game is part of it. But, like, yeah, man. Run game wise, I would like to see one of these running backs emerge, and you know, maybe it is Catron Allen, maybe it is JCM. I almost just kind of wish they made one more like real addition at this spot as well. It feels a little bit too much like a running backs don't Hope matter frame. Like a running backs don't matter fantasy team, like a zero RB fantasy team. You know, all right, he's capable in Rashad White, but not special. Sure, you get him in the mix and like some day three, you know, running back sleeper types and like a reclamation project in Jerome Ford. That's usually like your best ball zero RB team. That's what they look like, what Washington's team looks like here.
That's such a good point, man. Like, you got some late round lottery tickets that you're hoping to cash in on, right? Like, yeah, that's a good point. Anyways, I thought it was a good selection. Like I said, what do you got to lose if you're Washington to go picking up this guy, Catron Allen, who is literally one of the most productive running backs in college football history. He's Penn State's all-time leading rusher, man.
Sure.
Like, so obviously, and here's the thing, you don't fall ass backwards into that. You know what I mean? Like, he was good there.
Yeah, you don't fall your fat ass backwards. If you're the fat man, you don't fall.
Correct. Anyways, interesting stuff. Go check out these running back profiles here on receptionperception.com. I've written up 10 right now. I've got two more on the way. But yeah, a lot of interesting names for sure. Everyone says it's not a great running back class, which I would kind of sort of agree with. That being said, there are, I think, a good amount of contributors that I think can jump in here. We haven't released the Seth McGowan one out of Kentucky. What a weird player he is. But his marks end up looking really, really good. So I want people to kind of look for that also. Mac, our guy Max Toscano is going to have a huge data dump in regards to second year tight ends. Look for those profiles to drop, I believe, next week. A lot of interesting happenings and going ons here at receptionperception.com. And my goodness gracious, Matt, this player comp tool, holy hell, people are loving this thing.
Yeah, people are excited. I've been enjoying it too. It's fun sometimes to see some things that I would have thought, I wouldn't have thought, you know, and kind of tests my thinking on this. Of just, you know, for example, I actually really like we haven't discussed this player on the show, but I tweeted about this when I was kind of offline for my anniversary trip that I took with my wife, and I come back on Saturday, I see that Max actually put the Elik Iomanner chart out on the internet, and it's not a good looking chart. Okay. You know, we kind of we hinted at this, I believe, on last episode that his profile definitely like was a guy that was just unfairly put into a role that he, in no universe was he was going to be ready for. And obviously, the chart doesn't look very good. It's all red except slant flat screen. And I actually think that the player comp tool does a really good job with these sort of like disappointing year one players, because his top five matches are Preston Williams, Geronimo Allison, Marquise Lee, Kelvin Benjamin, and then Cortland Sutton. And it's like, okay, right? Like, you got a 1 of 5 shot of turning into a pretty decent player. So, but, like, yeah, I always say this, like, yeah, the guy has a bad rookie year profile. Like, the most, like, you look through the historic database, and now you can, you know, this is like, again, this is what the player comp tool does a pretty good job of showing. You know, you don't want to, but like, you look through the historic database, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of not good down there at the bottom. And then there's the Davante Adams example, which we've talked about many times, is like the outlier of all outliers. Yeah, nobody, I don't think anybody's going to do that again. But you can always hope, I guess, right? Like, but then usually you can find a couple of guys that had, you know, needed to develop. You know,
Keon Coleman's going to do it, Matt. Keon Coleman's going to do it.
You see, he was talking about this. He was said that they asked him how would he grade his season last year. He said, ass. So, you know, like, that's good. Love the self-awareness.
I do, too. I love Keon Coleman, the person, man. He's an interesting dude, man.
I mean, he needs to be a little more. I think he needs to be a little more serious. That's always. Listen, there's the Cam Newton viral video, right, where the, like, I love cookies. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen it. Everybody's seen it, where he was talking about Keon Coleman. He says, like, that stuff's, we love that stuff for young. We give that grace to young players. You know, it's like, that was my first thought when, like, he started missing meetings and stuff, and, you know, obviously some off field, you know, things there. It's like, yeah, you know, like, the guy asked, like,
it's time to lock in.
The guy had been like, do I sign here, like, my autograph, or, you know, like, do I love cookies, whatever. It's like, okay, let's maybe be a little serious here. Let's lock in a little bit. Time to lock in. But you know what? Hey, guy came in a league, young man, you know.
Super young.
He's 21,
I think.
Yeah, he's 23 years old right now. He just turned 23 3 days ago, May 17th.
Dude, happy birthday,
Keon
Come
Coleman.
Come on, bro.
23 years old. Time to get your life together. You know what? You put a camera in my face and I was 21, I probably would have said
oh man,
whatever. Not a fully developed human being. Okay.
No.
And I'm not Keon Coleman. Not even saying he's like a bad guy, but you know, it's like, it's time to 23 years old. Time to lock in.
Time to define
what's going to happen, what the rest of your life is going to be. So, you know,
he's going to do it.
I don't know if he's going to be Davante Adams. I'm going to go ahead and say
no. You heard it here first. No. Okay. I said he's going to be the next Devontae.
But the point. Yeah. Well, okay. So you've said Adam Randall's going to be the next Le'Veon Bell. You've said Keon Coleman is going to be the next Davante Adams. Any other takes you want to get off your chest here at minute 51 of the pod? But player comparison tool does a good job of showing, like, these sort of range of outcomes for players. And yeah, a guy like Elik Iomanner, I always say this for these guys, like, you don't want to totally write them off, but the odds are against, you know, you start your career off at this level. Yeah. The odds are against you turning into something great. I mean, it doesn't get much more like flame out than Marquise Lee, Preston Williams, and Geronimo Allison. Preston Williams, by the way, that's two times this week we've talked about Preston Williams.
Yeah, I know. What?
That's actually maybe the best use for player comparison tool is just like, remember some dudes, you know?
Yeah, remember that dude?
Get
remember
your buddies dude? Together on a Friday, Saturday night. Get a couple drinks, you know? Pull up the RP player comparison tool. Amazing. And start remembering some dudes. Start naming some dudes via the RP player comparison
remember
tool.
Remember that dude? Remember that dude?
Remember Preston Williams? No. Nobody.
Played a little bit for Miami. Remember that dude? Yeah, dude, it's crazy. Anyways, there you go. Great show. Wow, we went down a lot of tangents right there. So there you go. Anyways, go check it out, receptionperception.com. By the way, did y'all know we have a newsletter? I keep pumping this newsletter. Can we pump this thing a little bit more, man? Like, come on. This newsletter is awesome, man. Our guy Max Toscano does a good job with it. And again, maybe you don't want to subscribe to the site. That's okay. You subscribe to our newsletter, and you will get some player profiles, and you will get some, you know, interesting data sent your way in your mailbox just once a week. Not too invasive. You know what I mean? So sign up for the Reception Perception newsletter here as well. Anyways, we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.